Welcome to Knowing God in the Word, brought to you by the Word of Truth Ministry, publishers of Seed and Bread. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. This radio program is for the purpose of helping listeners fulfill the greatest need we have as believers, to know God. Today, Nathan will continue his teaching series on the book of Judges with Micah versus Dan. And now, Bible teacher Nathan Johnson.
Thanks, Bob. As we begin our Bible study this morning, I want to say that today we are starting to record the first of our sixth year of programs here at Knowing God in the Word. Now, the actual broadcast order might be somewhat different, but at this milestone, I want to say thank you to the Lord for 5 full years of programs on the air, and may He continue to bless our studies as we continue through His Word. Now, today we are starting in Judges chapter 18, and we saw that starting at Judges 17, in the last 5 chapters of Judges, we see the religious decline of Israel and the moral decline of Israel, just like in the first 16 chapters. Through the cycle of Judges that we saw, the 12 different judges, we saw the governmental decline of Israel. We saw in chapter 17 that Micah of Ephraim makes an idol and hires a Levite priest to serve his idol. And meanwhile, the tribal family of Dan finds the territory the Lord gave them too hard to take. And so instead, they spied out a place in another tribe's territory to appropriate for themselves. Their spies, on their way to find territory in another tribe to take, discover Micah and his idolatrous setup. And they then find Laish up in the territory of Naphtali or Manasseh that they think will be easy to take. So they bring their tribal family word. Now, as their tribal family heads for their chosen territory, they stop at Micah's house and decide to do something about his idolatry in chapter 18 and verse 14. Then the 5 men who had gone out of the country of Laish answered and said to their brethren, "Do you know that there are in these houses an ephod, that is a priestly garment, household idols, a carved image, and a molded image? Now therefore consider what you should do." Now their words, as they said them, were good. And indeed, it would have been good if Dan considered what they should do. Now what should they have done if they had considered what to do out of God's law? Well, Deuteronomy chapter 17 makes clear what they should have done when it says, "If there is found among you, within any of your gates which the Lord your God gives you, a man or a woman who has been wicked in the sight of the Lord your God in transgressing his covenant, who has gone and served other gods and worshipped them, either the sun or moon or any of the host of heaven, which I have not commanded, and it is told you, and you hear of it, then you shall inquire diligently. And if it is indeed true and certain that such an abomination has been committed in Israel, then you shall bring out to your gates that man or woman who has committed that wicked thing, and shall stone to death that man or woman with stones. Whoever is deserving of death shall be put to death on the testimony of 2 or 3 witnesses. He shall not be put to death on the testimony of 1 witness. The hands of the witnesses shall be the first against him to put him to death, and afterward the hands of all the people. So you shall put away the evil from among you." So this passage makes it clear. And remember, there were 5 of these spies of Dan. 5 witnesses, plenty to qualify, more than the 2 or 3 necessary, to testify against Micah and to put him and his whole idolatrous household, and maybe his whole idolatrous city, if they were joining with him in it, to put them all to death. And that's what they should have done. They should have destroyed it all. They should have destroyed all the inhabitants of Micah's city. They should have destroyed his idols. They should have destroyed his priest and his priestly garment. They should have destroyed it all. That's what the Lord's covenant demanded. By becoming idolaters, all the people of Micah's household and all who were associated with him were worthy of death, according to the law. Now, this goes contrary to what we think of as religious freedom. Freedom of religion is codified into our Bill of Rights. And that is that the federal government should not establish any national religion. Now, the Bill of Rights didn't stop the states or cities from codifying a religion, just the national government, which a lot of people forget nowadays. And back in that day, pretty much every state had an official religion. Some of them were different. But just the federal government couldn't. But still, this is contrary to our modern conception of religious freedom. But remember what the Lord had done. Israel had been slaves in Egypt. And the Lord, through his mighty power, sent 10 plagues on Pharaoh and all the Egyptians. And with his mighty power, he brought them out. And then when the Egyptian army pursued them to destroy them or to bring them back into captivity, the Lord destroyed the Egyptian army in the sea. And he told the Israelites that he had purchased them for himself by doing that, and therefore they were to enter into his agreement that he would be their God and they would be his people and they would not worship any other god. And they had entered into that agreement. So there was no religious freedom for the Israelites, just like there is no sexual freedom for someone who's married. You're supposed to only have relations with your marriage partner, and these Israelites are only supposed to worship their God. And so there was to be no freedom of religion in Israel. They were supposed to worship the Lord according to the covenant they had with him. So what would have been right for these Danites to do would have been to destroy all these idolaters who had broken the Lord's covenant, but that was not their plan. Verse 15, so they turned aside there and came to the house of the young Levite man, to the house of Micah, and greeted him. So they go to Micah's house and greet the young Levite priest. Now that's not how you go about executing someone, is it? You go to their house and say, hey, how's it going? How you doing? Going good? Greetings. Now that's probably not how you go when you're going to grab somebody to execute him. Verse 16, the 600 men armed with the weapons of war, who were of the children of Dan, stood by the entrance of the gate. So this was the 600-man army of this tribal family of Dan. And again, as I've said, no doubt the whole tribe of Dan could muster an army much larger than 600, thousands and tens of thousands in Dan. But this was just one tribal family that was doing this. But these 600 armed men, they outnumber Micah and the people of his town by far. So these are basically their armed thugs standing there at the entrance to Micah's house, ready to use force to stop any opposition to their nefarious plan. Verse 17, then the five men who had gone to spy out the land went up. Entering there, they took the carved image, the ephod, the household idols, and the molded image. The priest stood at the entrance of the gate with the 600 men who were armed with weapons of war. So while the 600 stand to be the armed backup at the gate of Micah's house, these five spies who know where all this stuff is, they go into his house, and instead of destroying this corruption, they prove what they've decided to do. They want these false gods for themselves. So they start bringing out of the house all Micah's idolatrous paraphernalia. So they're carrying out the carved image, the idol, the ephod, the priestly garment, the household idols. That's very interesting. Like I said, I think that was the table of Micah's ancestors they would use to worship his ancestors. They take that too. I don't know, maybe he had it on a gold tablet or something, so it's valuable. And then the molded image, another idol. So while they're doing this, the Levite priest stood at the entrance of the gate, and he is with the 600 men who are armed with their weapons, backing it all up. Verse 18, when these went into Micah's house and took the carved image, the ephod, the household idols, and the molded image, the priest said to them, what are you doing? So the priest is standing there with the 600 men, maybe talking to them, and he turns and he sees these five spies bringing out all his instruments for carrying out his job. His livelihood is being carried out of the house. So he asks, what are you doing? He's alarmed. Verse 19, and they said to him, be quiet. Put your hand over your mouth and come with us. Be a father and a priest to us. Is it better for you to be a priest to the household of one man or that you be a priest to a tribe and a family in Israel? So they tell him to be quiet, to put his hand over his mouth. In other words, to stop himself from talking. We would say, shut up. But they would say, put your hand over your mouth. And they say, we want you to come with us and be a father and a priest to us. Again, here's a young man, probably much younger than many of the people in this tribal family, and they talk about him being a father. So we see this hypocrisy that was alive in Micah's household is just as alive in this tribal family of Dan. And then they reason with him, is it better for you to be a priest to the household of one man or that you be a priest to a tribe and a family in Israel? Now remember, this was not the whole tribe of Dan, like I said. What they mean by a tribe and a family is a tribal family. And these tribes are descended from one of the 12 tribes of Israel, while the families in the tribes were often descended from the sons of the sons of Israel, or Israel's grandsons, or maybe even Dan's own grandsons, the great-grandsons of Israel, because Dan didn't have all that many sons. So you'd have the tribe, and then there would be the sub-tribes, which would be the families underneath the tribe, descended from the sons and grandsons, and maybe even great-grandsons of the tribal father. We know in the case of the household of David, he was many times descended from Judah, and his became a clan in Judah. So they say, you could become a priest to our whole family clan, and that'd be better than one household, a whole tribal family clan. Verse 20. So the priest's heart was glad, and he took the ephod, the household idols, and the carved image, and took his place among the people. So the priest is happy. He's just received a better offer of employment. And so he's more than happy to leave Micah and join this tribal family of Dan. Now he proves once again that he's a hireling. He's just out to earn a living. This is all a job to him. This isn't about serving the Lord. It's about a job. And sadly, all too many among the so-called clergy today are the same way. It's a job to them. It's not a mission to serve the Lord. It's just a job. And so they prove that they're hirelings by the way they act. Well, not all those in positions of leadership are that way. Some are really out to serve the Lord, but all too many are hirelings. Now remember, we were told that Micah had viewed this young man as if he was a son. But he shows no loyalty for his quote-unquote father. So he takes charge of the idolatrous accoutrements, and he joins their procession. Happily, he's got better employment now. Verse 21. Then they turned and departed, and put the little ones, the livestock, and the goods in front of them. So they carry away their stolen booty, but they change their marching order. Typically, when you're going to battle, you're expecting enemies to come from the front. You have the armed men going in front. And then you have the livestock and the elderly and the children and the women coming behind. But now that they've stole all these things from the household of Micah, they're expecting trouble from the rear. And so they put the livestock and children and old and young and women in front and have the armed men behind waiting for trouble from Micah. Verse 22. When they were a good way from the house of Micah, the men who were in the houses near Micah's house gathered together and overtook the children of Dan. So they had gotten a good ways away by the time Micah learned of it. And he's joined by the men in the houses near his, showing that he was not alone in his idolatry. It was not just his household. The people near him in his town were joining with him. So they band together and they pursue Dan. Verse 23. And they called out to the children of Dan. So they turned around and said to Micah, "What ails you that you have gathered such a company?" So they come near and call out to the Danite soldiers. The children of Dan, really the sons of Dan in Hebrew, are the representatives of Dan, and it means here the army, the soldiers that were following behind. Because remember, an army can represent the people. When we talk about the United States storming the beaches of Normandy in France in World War II, well, the United States did storm the beaches, but it wasn't every single man, woman, and child in the United States. The country itself didn't uproot and go. No, it was the army representing us. And in this case, they're calling out to the Danite soldiers representing this family of Dan. Well, they turn around and they ask, "What's wrong? Why have you followed us with such a company?" Well, of course they knew. They had just stolen a bunch of things from Micah. So of course they knew. That was why they put the weak in the front and had the soldiers behind. They were expecting trouble. But the tribe of Dan here is showing the same kind of hypocrisy that Micah did. They act like they have no idea why he would be upset that they had just stolen a bunch of things from him. So we should remember Micah's hypocrisy and not feel sorry for him. Basically, what we have here are two groups of hypocrites, two weasels facing off with each other. And we definitely shouldn't have sympathy for either of them. Verse 24. So he said, "You have taken away my gods, which I made, and the priest, and you have gone away. Now what more do I have? How can you say to me, 'What ails you?'" So Micah points out to them the obvious. They have stolen his manufactured gods and his priests. He has lost it all. So how can they act like they don't know the problem? Now notice his plain speaking here. Everything in chapter 17 was hypocrisy. He made idols to worship the Lord. He made a Levite man his idolatrous priest. And he said the Lord would be pleased with him because he did it. But now when the chips are down, he says, "I made these gods. These are the gods I made. And this is the priest I made." He doesn't say these are the Lord's idols and the Lord's priests. No, he knows they're not. And his hypocrisy flees, and he speaks the truth in his anger. These were his manufactured gods. This was his priest that he had made for himself. So notice his chiding, too, of the hypocritical words of Dan. So here he is, the consummate hypocrite, and yet he shows that he doesn't like hypocrisy so much when he finds it in others, being hypocritical toward him. Well, that's the way of hypocrites. Verse 25, "And the children of Dan said to him, 'Do not let your voice be heard among us, lest angry men fall upon you, and you lose your life and the lives of your household. So the sons of Dan respond and threaten them. They tell him to not let his voice be heard among them. Again, basically, they're telling him to shut up. And they say, if you don't be quiet, well, some angry man just might happen to fall upon you. And in Hebrew, this is actually men who are bitter of soul. People are upset by your words. Well, they might just lose their tempers and attack you. And then you would lose your soul and the souls of your household. The word life and lives here in English are soul and souls in the Hebrew. You'll lose them if some of our men lose their tempers and decide to destroy you. Verse 26, then the children of Dan went their way. And when Micah saw that they were too strong for him, he turned and went back to his house. So the sons of Dan continue on their way, and Micah sees they're greatly outnumbered. He might have not have known how many thieves there were when he gathered the men around his household, figured they'd be enough to overcome them. When he sees how greatly he's outnumbered, he realizes he has no choice but to give in and to go back home. So their theft of all Micah's idolatrous equipment is successful. Verse 27, so they took the things Micah had made, and the priest who had belonged to him, and went to Laish, to a people quiet and secure. And they struck them with the edge of the sword and burned the city with fire. So the sons of Dan take all Micah's idolatrous implements and his priest, and they take them to Laish. And then we're reminded why they wanted to attack Laish, because this was a peaceful people, not used to war and far from anyone who could help them, quiet and secure. So they attacked them with the edge of the sword and burned the city with fire. Now the point we're supposed to get here is not to feel sorry for this peaceful people who were destroyed. They were inhabitants of the land Israel is supposed to take over. Supposed to drive them out. I don't know, and there isn't necessarily any indication that they were Canaanites, so they didn't necessarily have wiped them out. But they certainly were supposed to drive them out of the land, at least. So we're not supposed to feel sorry for them. We're just supposed to remember that these people of Dan were taking territory from another tribe just because it was easy to take, rather than taking the territory from their own tribal lands that the Lord had given them. Verse 28, there was no deliverer because it was far from Sidon, and they had no ties with anyone. It was in the valley that belongs to Beth-Rehob. So they rebuilt the city and dwelt there. So again, we're reminded that no serious opposition was aroused because they were far from their capital of Sidon, and they had no allies in the area. So there was no one to help them. We're told the city was in the valley by Beth-Rehob, which means house of the street. So Dan took this easy victory, and like we saw last time, they credited it to God, even though this was not the victory God had set for them. Well, after destroying the city of Laish, they rebuilt it and lived in it. Verse 29, and they called the name of the city Dan, after the name of Dan their father, who was born to Israel. However, the name of the city formerly was Laish. So they named the new city Dan after their ancestor. And they're proud of this, but notice by this very name they testify to the fact that here is Dan outside of Dan's rightful territory. Dan was supposed to be down by Benjamin and by Judah. It wasn't supposed to be up here in the north. So they're actually proud of their waywardness, proud that they are there in another tribe's territory, and they name it Dan, bold as brass, showing their disobedience to the Lord. Well, that's the kind of people this tribal family of Dan was. Verse 30, then the children of Dan set up for themselves the carved image. And Jonathan, the son of Gershom, the son of Manasseh, and his sons were priests to the tribe of Dan until the day of the captivity of the land. So they set up the graven image, and they make the young Levite the priest of this image, along with his sons after him. And now we have an O. Henry-style surprise ending in the Bible here, because finally, after two chapters, the name of this young Levite is revealed. He is Jonathan. Well, that's a good name. It means Jehovah has given. He's the son of Gershom, or foreigner, the son of Manasseh. But is it really Manasseh? The Companion Bible has a note on this. It says, this word is one of the four, in other words, in the Old Testament, that has a suspended letter. Here the letter Nun, or N, is written partly in the line and partly above the line to show that originally it formed no part of the word, but was put in to make it spell Manasseh instead of Moses. Now, in English, it's hard to see how one N could change the name Moses to Manasseh. But when we understand that the Hebrew word for Moses was Moshe, and remember that Hebrew didn't have vowels, Moshe is spelled M-S-H, and Manasseh is spelled M-N-S-H. Well, we can see how one letter would change Moses, or Moshe, into Manasseh. Continuing with a companion Bible note, Jonathan was the grandson of Moses, his contemporary Phinehas, the grandson of Aaron, being mentioned in chapter 20 and verse 28 of Judges. This was done for two reasons, in other words, the name change. One, to spare the honor of Moses' memory and name, and two, to put the sin upon one who committed so gross a sin. Of course, this is referring to Manasseh, the king of Judah, many hundreds of years after this. Of course, it would be silly to say that this was that Manasseh because it was so much sooner, but basically they were taking Manasseh as being a compromised name. Companion Bible note again, the Talmud gives this latter as the reason. Jonathan's name is omitted in 1 Chronicles 23:15 and 16 and 26:24. In other words, where it lists the sons of Moses, it says, the sons of Moses were Gershon and Eleazar. Of the sons of Gershon, Shebuel was the first. And then 1 Chronicles 26:24, Shebuel, the son of Gershon, the son of Moses, was overseer of the treasuries. The Companion Bible says that the Chaldean paraphrase says that Shebuel, there substituted, in other words, for Jonathan, is meant for Jonathan after his repentance and restoration. Shebuel means he returned to God. The Authorized Version, meaning the King James Version, follows the Septuagint and the Chaldean by putting Manasseh in the text. The Revised Version, that was the next Bible published by the Church of England, follows the Vulgate and those codices and early editions which have N suspended by putting Moses in the text and Manasseh in the margin. So what this is to say is that the ancient rabbis changed the name Moses to Manasseh to hide the fact that Moses' grandson had been this leader of idolatry, but he was. And sadly, Moses' family led in turning Israel away from the Lord. Very sad. Now notice it says that they were priests of the tribe of Dan until the day of the captivity of the land. And this idolatry was never put down until the captivity. Verse 31, so they set up for themselves Micah's carved image which he made, all the time that the house of God was in Shiloh. So this idolatrous place of worship was a rival to God's chosen place. All the time God's chosen place was Shiloh. Now Shiloh was the first place chosen by God. Only later in the days of David, hundreds of years later, did God choose Jerusalem. So we only know for sure that this went on until Shiloh was destroyed. So when it says till the day of the captivity of the land, I've told you I think the prophet Samuel is probably the author of Judges, or at least of the latter part of Judges. But of course, Samuel lived long before Israel went into the Assyrian captivity. So how could there be a note here that this lasted until the captivity of the land? Well, there's two possibilities. One is that this could be an insertion by a later prophet. The Bible was copied over many hundreds of years. But as long as there were true prophets of the Lord available while it was being copied, a true prophet could get a word from the Lord. I want you to add a footnote here to make it more plain. And he could add a note or add a line, and since he was the Lord's prophet, that line would be just as much the word of the Lord as the original had been without the addition. And we see multiple times in the Old Testament where this seems to have happened. A later prophet added a note in an earlier book. But the thing is, this mention of God's chosen place being Shiloh tells us that this captivity may more be thinking of when Shiloh was destroyed, and the land was brought into captivity to the Philistines. And that would be contemporary with Samuel, so then it wouldn't have to be a later prophet at all. It could have been Samuel. But we don't know. I think it could have been either one. And we know that in the days of David, he might have gotten rid of this idolatry, but later, in the days of Jeroboam, he set up a golden calf in Dan. And then it was an idolatrous center in Israel until the end. So Dan was the start of idolatry in Israel. And that could be why Jacob said what he said about them in Genesis 49:17. Dan shall be a serpent by the way, that bites the horse's heels so that its rider shall fall backward. And that could be because Dan was the start of idolatry in Israel. This could also be the reason that in Revelation 7 verses 4 through 8, when it lists the number of those who were sealed, 144,000 of all the tribes of the children of Israel were sealed, it lists as the 12 tribes, Judah, Reuben, Gad, Asher, Naphtali, Manasseh, of course, of Joseph, Simeon, Levi, which sometimes isn't included, Issachar, Zebulun, Joseph himself, and then Benjamin, and never lists Dan. So it lists 12, but Dan is cut out in Revelation. Well, that could be because they were the initial idolatrous tribe in Israel, and that's why they aren't honored in Revelation. Of course, it's hard to say. That's just a guess. So Judges 18 further shows us the religious decline of Israel. The tribe of Dan, finding the idolatrous worship of Micah, instead of wiping it out as the law would have demanded, steal it for themselves. Micah's priest chose his character as a hireling by eagerly accepting a better offer. Micah is foiled by hypocrisy as great as his own. Are we more faithful to our duties and the truth of God than the blatant and ignorant hypocrites of Micah's household and this family of Dan? Dan takes land not their own because it was easy. Do we go for easy victories when the Lord set out something harder for us instead? Jonathan, Moses' grandson, becomes the idolatrous priest of Dan. And we can understand that family background means little. It is your own choice what you do before God that really matters. Well, let's learn these important lessons from the book of Judges, chapter 18.
The people of Dan betray Micah by taking his idols, the things associated with the worship of idols, and Micah's own hired, so-called priest, showing the continuation of the religious decline in Israel. This unfaithful priest is revealed to be none other than Jonathan, the grandson of Moses. Thank you, Nathan, for your lesson on Micah versus Dan. On our next program, Nathan will continue his teaching series on the book of Judges with The Levite's Concubine. Thank you for joining us today. Our hope is that as you study God's Word, you know God more and you love God more. For more information on the program, to hear past programs, and for other downloadable material that Nathan has produced, please visit our website at knowinggodintheword.org. I'm your host, Bob Juneau, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. So long for now, but we look forward to you joining us next week on Knowing God in the Word.